Hi, this is Rini Primeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer, telling you to stay tuned to WNJC 1360 AM for Thursday in the Doghouse, coming right up.
Mama was a mutt, Daddy was one too. Me, I'm a little bit of everything, everything that I use. One day I'm walking down my block.
Hi, everyone. It's me again, Rini Primeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer, welcoming you to my weekly radio program, Thursday in the Doghouse. Hopefully, you already know that my show is all about dogs, and it airs every Thursday morning from 10 to 10:30 right here on WNJC 1360 AM. What did you say? You missed last week's show? No worries. Just go to my website, www.jerseydogtrainer.com, and click on the menu button, Rainey's Radio Show. You'll see a huge list of podcast links arranged by category and then by topic of all of my previous programs. Click on the topic you want to hear and listen to that show in its entirety. I interview all sorts of experts in this field, like trainers and behavior consultants, veterinarians, nutrition specialists, and shelter and rescue workers. If you want to be a really well-informed pet parent, be sure to tune into my show on a regular basis. My guest today is Jill Halstead. Jill is a graduate of the renowned San Francisco SPCA Dog Trainers Academy, which is directed by author and trainer Gene Donaldson. The Academy focuses on teaching trainers to resolve behavior and obedience problems using both classical and operant conditioning. Through years of training both shelter dogs and her own dogs, Jill is convinced of the effectiveness of positive reinforcement training methods, even with the most difficult dogs. Positive reinforcement methods are the only methods proven to train dogs without causing emotional fallout like fear and aggression. Jill also attends workshops and clinics annually and works with a wide variety of breeds. She owns her own business called Follow the Leader Dog Training, and she's located in Richmond, Vermont. She's also a member of the Association of Pet Dog Trainers. Jill is most interested in talking with you today about how to select a good dog trainer and hopefully how to communicate and work with a professional in order to make training your dog a successful endeavor. Before we talk to Jill, I'd like to tell you what services I offer here in the South Jersey area as a professional dog trainer and certified behavior consultant. Is your dog always in the doghouse? Does he greet people by jumping all over them? Does she chew your shoes and steal your undies? Guess what? Your dog needs training. Hi, I'm Rini Primeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer, and I train dogs using only positive-based methods. My services include private training right in your own home. I also offer group puppy kindergarten classes starting at 8 weeks of age, and group classes for adolescent and adult dogs beginning at 5 months of age. All group classes are held at Dog Days Camp for Canines, 23 West Main Street, Marlton, New Jersey. For more information, please contact me at 609-280-9338 or on the web at www.jerseydogtrainer.com. Again, that's 609-280-9338 or on the web at www.jerseydogtrainer.com. Good morning, Jill. Thanks so much for joining us in the doghouse today.
Good morning, Rady. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. It's nice to be talking to you directly rather than on the internet.
Yes.
Jill, what is the best way for people to go about searching for a good dog trainer?
Well, you know, there are several ways. You know, of course, there's the web, but I tell people to be cautious about what they, you know, what they believe about what they see on the web. There are, you know, lots of people out there who will describe their services one way, and then it ends up being something else in terms of methods or, you know, what they can actually provide in terms of services. Mm-hmm. So I really like people to ask other pet parents, you know, who did you use? You know, how did it go? What was the pricing like? So those are some good ways. Sometimes asking your veterinarian is a good way to go. Mm-hmm. Other times not. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I think a lot of veterinarians, you know, that their specialty is physical health for dogs, which is great. But they're not always so up to date on training, particularly with dogs who have aggression or other behavior problems.
I agree. So I agree with you.
Definitely think, you know, the word of mouth thing. And if you do get to a website, you know, and you're interested, you know, call or send an email, you know, ask some questions, be an informed consumer. Mm-hmm. And I think you'll have a better result.
Do you as a dog trainer experience this a lot? Because I do, and people might call me, even though I have a website, I'll ask them, have you looked around my website to see what methods I use or to see what fees I charge? And many times people will say no. And so what they're doing is they're going down a list of people that they've seen on the web, price shopping.
Yes, I agree with you. And in fact, sometimes I get to a consult and, you know, even though I always have emailed with the person or spoken with them on the phone, and they, you know, they still think I'm going to come in and, you know, scruff, shake, and roll and pin their dog. And mm-hmm. when I say, no, that's not the methods that I use, they're like, oh, really? So, yeah, I think it's really important to kind of, you know, go through that website a little bit mm-hmm. because sometimes, you know, there are differences in fees. For example, my initial consults are more expensive than my follow-up sessions, because in the initial consult I write a fairly detailed report with recommendations specific to the family, the dog, the situation, mm-hmm. and then I offer a 2-month free follow-up period by email or phone. So a lot of people aren't even aware of that, and mm-hmm. that's a pretty big thing for a lot of people. I mean, again, the idea is for people to succeed. So I think that's an important piece. So, and then also I charge a travel fee after a certain distance.
Me too. Mm-hmm. Have to.
So, yeah. You know, sometimes I'll get there and people say, oh, you know, what about the travel fee? It's, you know, it's blah, 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 more or less than I thought. Mm. Well, that's all posted on my website. But still, it's really important for people to ask. Go through the website. If you find someone that you like, you call them. Make sure either you ask those questions, and again, I think a lot of the theme of what we're going to be talking about today is for people to ask questions.
Correct.
Don't be shy. You're paying this person a decent chunk of change mm-hmm. to come into your house or, you know, provide the class. You know what you're getting.
In your opinion, other than fees and charges, what key questions should people really be asking those trainers that they're contacting? I understand that people are price shopping because the economy is really bad, and they have to know that they can afford it. And many people today, honestly, they can't. But what key questions should they be asking about methods?
Well, I think, you know, they want to know, first of all, is the trainer, do they have experience in the area of behavior issue that they're, you know, needing work with? For example, not everybody does separation anxiety cases.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got something like that, make sure that you've got someone who is, you know, experienced at that. And also, you know, with other types of training, like, for example, stranger aggression or resource guarding. I mean, you want to make sure that you're saying, you know, asking the person, what sorts of methods are you going to use? Are you going to use a shock collar?
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to be, you know, again, scruffing, pinning, rolling? Are you going to be using any other kind of aversive in the training? You know, and you're not going to go through the entire protocol, but definitely get a sense, you know, of what the person's methods are going to be. And I think even in asking those types of questions, you'll be able to kind of suss out whether or not you've got someone who's really got experience, who's got a good solid base of information and knowledge to come into your home, work with you and your dog, and have a good result.
A lot of times, too, when people ask questions, they ask direct questions, just like you may have mentioned. Do you use a shock collar? Do you use aversive methods? And I would like to just suggest, because I ask open-ended questions to my clients, too, because you really want to get their own ideas right from their own minds. You don't want to convince, you know, you don't want to influence how they answer that question. So if you talk to a trainer, you may not want to say, do you use this method or do you use use that method, just ask, what methods do you use? Can you describe them to me?
Well, I think that that's a good point. However, I think that you sometimes really need to, you know, that might be a time to not ask an open-ended question, to say, will you use a shock collar on my duck, or do you recommend their use? Because, again, I mean, there are some sort of euphemistic type descriptions of different types of training, for example, the natural dog training. Well, what does that mean? I mean, it sounds good. It sounds like no one's going to get hurt. But honestly, you know, there are some people who use that type of description, and they are the people who are, you know, hanging dogs by choke chains and using shock collars and other types of aversive methods. So I would have to disagree with you a little bit there, Renee.
That's fine.
And say, yeah, they should ask, what exactly is this going to entail?
Yeah, you made a good point there. So if you're looking for obedience classes, if people are looking for obedience classes, would it be a good idea for them to go and observe that trainer's class first?
I think definitely. You know, you're really hiring a teacher, you know, a coach. And, you know, you want to know what you're getting yourself into. And like you said, you know, this is a good chunk of change, and this is a rough time in the economy. And I think people are, I give them a lot of credit for getting out there and saying, yeah, I'm going to put down this couple $100 or whatever on, you know, working with my dog to make sure that it becomes a pet that everybody in the house likes. Nobody's avoiding. People aren't avoiding coming over to your house because they don't want your dog jumping all over them or stealing food off their plate at a barbecue. So definitely, I think observing is a good idea. Is this a good fit for you? Does the instructor speak in a way that makes sense to you? People learn in different ways. And so I think it's important to find someone who you say, yeah, you know, that class was great. It was full of good energy. People were learning. People were engaged. They got to ask questions. Nobody, you know, was made to feel like they're asking something stupid, like, oh, you got to be kidding me. Well, you know, I'll talk to you after class kind of thing. So I think absolutely going in and have a look, you know, at classes is a good idea.
Good. And suppose you asked a client, maybe this has happened to you. I know it's happened to me. Where you ask a client specific questions about their dog in order to really gain a thorough understanding of what a problem might be. And sometimes clients are too embarrassed to tell you about something that the dog has done.
Yeah.
Have you ever experienced that?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Yes, I have experienced that. And, you know, I sort of take that as a little bit of a personal failure, because, you know, I want to go in there and say to them, look it, I am on your side. I want to hear everything, the good, the bad, and the ugly, you know, that applies to the situation. You know, sometimes it's hard to stay away from a lot of the superfluous information. But that's less of a concern. What I want to do is, you know, really make them comfortable and say, gee, you know, tell me. I want to know, you know, if he bit a kid, how bad was the bite, you know? And again, I ask, like you said, the open-ended questions, but also the specific questions, because I want to know what are we dealing with here. So I think, you know, I encourage owners to tell me everything honestly, and sometimes it doesn't happen. For example, I had a case recently of a family. They were trying to integrate two dogs, and that went well. One was a very large German Shepherd who had not had good dog skills, good dog relations. And so we worked on that, and everything was going really well. And then I got an email from them, oh, a month or so later, saying, gee, we didn't tell you everything. Yeah, and it was that the dog had some resource guarding and had bitten both of the people involved several times, once rather badly. So, you know, gee, if I'd known that, we could have worked on it. I would have made that a priority, you know. And it's not, you know, most trainers who have experience are not going to go in and say, boy, I've never seen this before. You know, they're going to say, okay, you've got a resource guarder. You know, let's work on that. Let's talk about what the triggers are. And so that's the specificity piece that is important. But again, the open-ended questions, whenever I start to wrap up, I say, is there anything else I need to know? And that's, you know, absolutely, if you get to the end of a consult and you feel like, gee, they never asked about this, say, boy, there's one more thing I wanted to talk about.
Well, see, the thing is, they're asking for help, and they have to realize if they're not really honest and upfront about any problems that the dog has exhibited, then they're the ones who are going to lose out, them
Absolutely.
And their dog. How
Absolutely.
Can you fix something if you don't know what's the problem?
I don't know. Maybe it goes back to the money piece, and people think, boy, if... You know, we get into the resource guarding thing, it's going to cost me more money, or I don't know exactly what happened in that case. But, you know, that's a fairly extreme example. But, you know, like I said, I mean, the trainer is there to help you, and, you know, you're not going to go to your doctor and save a cough and then leave the office and then say, you know, gee, I didn't want to mention that funny mole I have on my shoulder.
Right.
You know,
right.
I mean, go in there, tell the truth. I mean, don't go in there. When the person comes, tell the truth. Don't be embarrassed. Mm-hmm. Again, you know, you're going to have done your homework so that you're working with someone that you're comfortable with, mm-hmm. you know, and has experience and isn't going to, you know, all of a sudden be like, oh, geez, I can't work with you because of this.
Right. That's it gets a little complicated sometimes.
It does get complicated sometimes. Mm-hmm. And certainly there are times, you know, if I go to a consult and I've, you know, heard that there's ABCD behaviors, and then I get there and all of a sudden I hear about an E that's really kind of out in left field, I might then refer them to a veterinary behaviorist.
Absolutely. I do that a lot because there are those times when dogs can present problems that we just can't handle, and, you know, we don't have the background that a behaviorist would have, and so it's very important that we not have an ego trip about this
Absolutely.
And know when to refer.
Yep, and I think a good, you know, competent trainer is going to be able to suss that out in a situation that says, you know, when I start to hear things like, boy, you know, he goes off like a light switch,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then I dig for triggers, and there really and truly aren't any, it seems.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if the behavior is really over the top, I mean, that somebody's really in danger or has already been hurt, you know, in some significant way, then I'm going to refer.
One of the things that you mentioned earlier is about getting a referral from your vet, and I have to put this information out there also. Vets are wonderful, and there are many, many wonderful vets out there. But I have been in contact, unfortunately, with several vets in my area who feel that shock collars are a great way to work with dogs, even basic obedience training. Uh-huh. I don't understand that theory. I don't understand why they feel that way. We have vets that have trainers who work right in their offices who openly use shock collars.
Uh-huh.
And so people have to be very aware that, you know, that's just about the worst method in the world. It scares me when people go to their vet and the vet suggests shock. It just, I don't understand it.
But yeah, I don't really either. I think that, you know, it may be a function of vets just being so busy keeping up on, you know, drugs and medical protocols that, you know, they had that, you know, class or whatever in vet school, and they learned about, you know, these methods then way back when, which mm-hmm. are now considered quite outdated,
right.
You know, and they either haven't kept up or, gee, it seems to work. And let's face it, some of the shock stuff really does work.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is you get a lot of fallout, or mm-hmm. at least potentially. And when you do get fallout, it can be quite serious.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, even smaller things, like I've had, you know, I've seen puppies or you know, young adolescent dogs where the dog is just biting, you know, biting, won't let anybody near them, had previously been fine. Well, the vet said if the dog mouths you, you know, hold his snout closed, squeeze it hard, and if the tongue gets in between the teeth, all the better.
Oh, my God.
Right? So now you've got a dog who says, don't come near me.
Yeah.
So I would consider that very bad advice. There are very, mm-hmm. you know, some other much better ways to deal with puppy mouthing. And, in fact, it's an opportunity to teach really good bite inhibition.
Correct.
Which will help keep the dog from biting hard multiple times, mm-hmm. you know, over the course of its life, mm-hmm. potentially, if somebody would slip and fall on the dog while it's sleeping mm-hmm. or accidentally kick it or shut a tail in the door or something. The dog with good bite inhibition says, oh, I know people are soft, so I can just bite one little time to make my point.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, like we said, you are not trashing vets at all. God love them. You know, they save our butts in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for, you know, behavioral advice, I think a trainer, a behavior counselor is probably going to have better and more up-to-date information to share.
I agree with you there. Are people sometimes very surprised when you start working with them just about how much work this can entail for them?
I think some people are, you know, and a lot of times it's the people who had, you know, the perfect dog last time.
Mm-hmm.
And now they've gotten a puppy, and now it's 6 months old or 8 months old, and it's not that perfect 10-year-old that they remember.
Right.
So, you know, or they forgot what a drag it is to do puppy potty training. It's a lot of work. And so I think that, yes, people are surprised sometimes that, you know, they are going to have to do a lot of legwork.
Mm-hmm.
There's no doubt about it. And, again, it depends on the dog. So, you know, some dogs are just quick studies. Others are a little slower. And, you know, those guys can be a little frustrating for people. On the other hand, they're really smart, quick dogs. Boy, they learn what we want, and then they learn how to do things that we don't want,
mm-hmm.
but it works for them. So, now what does the person do? This is like a dog who finds an illegal game, like tugging on someone's pants
mm-hmm.
to get attention,
right.
you know, or jumping up and, you know, pulling their hair or jewelry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it works to get attention. Someone
mm-hmm.
says, hey, knock it off, right?
Mm-hmm.
Dog says, woohoo, we're
right.
halfway there to a game.
Yeah, that's right.
So, yeah, it does. It takes consistency. It also takes, you know, put your dog in a timeout. That's
mm-hmm.
legwork. That's
mm-hmm.
a pain in the neck.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you're not going to be doing it forever, and that's the whole point, is you're training toward a goal
mm-hmm.
so that you do have a dog who doesn't jump on people who come to the house
mm-hmm.
or, you know, steal food or, you know, go after the FedEx guy or the kid riding his bike down the road.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is to get there and not to train forever. So, you know, while it seems daunting up front, you know, if you got a good protocol and you're going to be consistent and work at it, then you're probably going to get there.
I think so. I always tell my clients, the harder they work with their dog, the faster it goes.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, you have to do the work. It's your dog. You live with your dog. They don't live with us. We can come in there and maybe we can get the dog to behave really well with us quickly using positive methods.
Yeah.
But we leave, and so it's up to you to get the dog to respond to you just as quickly.
That's exactly right. And I think sometimes what happens is people, you know, the dog has a history with them,
mm-hmm,
right?
Exactly.
Like, so jumping up or biting clothing or whatever has worked.
Mm-hmm.
So they're overcoming that.
Mm-hmm.
Versus when you or I come in the door, we're going to, you know, dog jumps, and I'm going to immediately step on the leash and ask them to sit.
Uh-huh.
Once they sit, good puppy, I'll
mm-hmm.
greet you and I'll give you some treats.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm reinforcing it right from the get-go. The dog's getting nothing for jumping, so he says, oh, that doesn't work with her.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to give it up. And this, I think, is sometimes the sort of magic wand thing that people get a little bit dismayed about. They say, oh, my God, he was so good with you. He's horrible with us. What's wrong with us?
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with you. The dog is overcoming a history with you. He's relearning.
Right.
So rather than starting at square one with me, he's down the road with you a little ways.
That's right.
So you've got to, you know, be even extra vigilant.
Sure.
To get him to where you want him to be.
When you're working with a problem, like either separation anxiety, fear, aggression, things that are complicated in that nature, do you find that you gain a better insight into what's going when you're not there by asking for updates, and do you get those updates easily from your clients?
I wish I would get more updates, quite
mm-hmm.
honestly.
Yeah.
Because as I mentioned earlier, I do provide a 2-month free follow-up period by email or phone.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I definitely want to hear, and I don't hear as much. So what happens is I often end up, you know, I'll check in with the person, and maybe I hear, yeah, most of the time I hear things are going great.
Mm-hmm.
So good. Okay, I'm glad to hear things are going great. But there's probably something
mm-hmm.
that's not, you know, working the way you wanted it to. And maybe it's that they feel like if they tell me that, I'm going to give them some more homework to do, you know.
Yeah.
And maybe they feel like, that we got enough to do, thanks.
Right. Right. And that's a shame.
So I don't know what that's all about exactly,
mm-hmm.
and I've sort of pondered that, because I do feel like, you know, you paid me the money, and that's part of the service that you bought. So use it. I mean, don't be telling me, oh, this morning he drank 3 cups of water as opposed to 2.5.
Mm-hmm.
That's nice, but it's not really relevant.
Mm-hmm.
But I do want to know, gee, you know, the mailman came the other day and he just barely lifted his head and looked.
Wow.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
Not only do I get a chance to reinforce the people who are doing the training, the owners, but also it helps me to understand, you know, what is really working best, fastest for people generally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the protocols that I can the next time say, you know, this worked really well for Fluffy. Let's try it with this guy who has a similar kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you're kind of helping yourself and you're helping other people when you keep in touch.
Right. Agreed.
Yep.
What situations should people think of as a red flag that they need to discontinue their relationship with whoever they hired to train their dog?
Well, I think that, you know, if you start to feel uncomfortable about, you know, the methods, I mean, maybe it started off, you know, gee, we're going to do, you know, reinforcement training, and then things didn't progress as quickly as possible or as hoped, and, you know, all of a sudden the trainer says, let's put a shock collar on him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would walk away from that because mm-hmm. that's not the method I signed up for,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then also, you know, I know that I'd be flirting with this fallout, fear, and aggression stuff
mm-hmm.
that I, you know, that's the last thing I want to do is make my dog worse. Or maybe he's better, say it's a dog who barks a lot, I put a shock collar on him, he's quiet, that's great,
mm-hmm.
but now he's freaked out and he's chewing things and he's, you know, he won't come inside or he won't leave the house or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
So I would definitely cut ties if that happened. But again, you need to know, you know, what did you purchase? What's your out, you know, in terms of money? Gee, I bought a 5 or 6 session package, and now we're at session 4, and he or she is saying, let's go to the shock collar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where am I financially on that?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, again, you want to have your ducks in a line before you sign up. And also, I think just people who, you know, kind of check out on you, you know, maybe there's a follow-up period and you don't hear back from the trainer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's no good because
right.
you're at a point where you need the help.
Mm-hmm.
Either things are going well, great, or
mm-hmm.
they're not going well. And, you know, a good, experienced trainer is going to be able to say, okay, this isn't working. Let's try this instead.
Mm-hmm.
Let's try, you know, if you've got a really fearful dog or something, let's shrink that dog's world even more than we did to start.
Right, right.
For example, so I would say if you're not getting any feedback and you need it and you paid for it, or you're starting to hear about methods that you're not comfortable with, or if the trainer's just like, you know, not being, you know, nice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is, again, this is about, you paid for this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you want a good result, and you don't need somebody telling you that, you know, you're doing this wrong and doing that wrong and doing this wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me what you want me to do as
mm-hmm.
the owner. So,
right.
again, this kind of goes to, like, when we tell dogs, no, 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 right?
Mm-hmm.
Dogs sitting there saying, well, what do you want me to do?
Right.
I want you to leave it. I
mm-hmm.
want you to stay.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to sit.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I think people need that same kind of information because this dog training is a skill. And a lot, well, none of us is born knowing it.
That's correct.
And, you know, you need your teacher to help you.
That's right. One last thing. What, one thing I would like to put out there, and I'm sure that you have things to offer here too. Many people will tell me that they have used a trainer and the trainer did something horrendous on the first time they met the trainer. And I'll ask them, well, how long did the trainer do this with your dog? She says, oh my God, it was a whole hour and I was freaking out. I felt so horrible.
Yeah.
We need to remember that our dogs are members of our family, and if this was a human, we would know right away because we would have that instinct, stop what you're doing because you're hurting somebody.
Mm-hmm.
But we think with our dog, okay, well, this person's an expert. They must know what they're doing, so they allow the dog to endure that for an
right.
extended period of time. So I'm sure you'll agree you've got to stop it as soon as you see it and you're uncomfortable with it. Tell the person to stop.
Absolutely. There's no excuse for hurting dogs, scaring them, you know, I mean, it's just not necessary and it's really unfair to them. We ask so much of them in living in our human world.
Mm-hmm.
So many of the behaviors we want from them are completely antithetical to their natural instincts.
Right.
And so if, you know, it'd be like if you hired a piano teacher for your kid and they were slamming the, you know, the little thing that comes down onto the keys on the kid's fingers,
right.
you'd get that kid out of there, right?
right? Jill, we only have a minute left, sweetheart. Can you give out your information so if people want to get more information about you and possibly contact you?
Sure, sure. Well, as I said, I'm in Vermont, or as you said. So, but maybe if anyone's up here or just, you know, whatever, if they want any kind of information, my website is dogtrainingvermont.com. And then I also have my email address, which is lookout, and that's at gmavt.net.
Very nice. Thank you very much for coming on with this subject. It was wonderful talking with you.
Thank you, Rainy. Same here.
And I hope you have a wonderful day.
Thank you. You too. Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks, Duke, for reminding me that we are definitely out of time. Join us next week when I'll be talking with Dr. Arthur Young, a local homeopathic veterinarian located in Mount Laurel, New Jersey. Have a great week, everybody.
Mama was a mutt. Daddy was one too. Me, I'm a little bit of everything. Everything that I use. One day I'm walking down my block. I'm walking that walk I walk. When I spy me a pretty tear, I said it's time to go talk my talk. Said I like that ribbon in your hair. Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out?